We are Brother Fry, well known in Staten Island, Jersey City, and the East, and he knows he needs no introduction, and he will state his own subject.
Well, dear friends, we thought that this afternoon we would consider with you for a while Paul's epistle to the Hebrews. And you'll note that we're just old-fashioned enough to believe that Paul was the writer of the epistle to the Hebrews. We're sorry to see that so many of the brethren these days would rather say the writer of the epistle to the Hebrews. But we believe that there has been no one else but the Apostle Paul who could have written this epistle. He was a learned man. He was taught at the feet of Gamaliel, one of the greatest, in fact, one of the six Jewish rabbis that is called by the name of Rabban. He was born in the city of Tarsus, in Cilicia, which was a Greek city. He was a Hebrew of the Hebrews. He was a Pharisee. And of course, this enabled him to get almost into any situation that was required in the days of the early church. He wrote this epistle, as it were, to the Hebrews, because of the fact that there was a need in those days. And the need was that those who had been of the Jewish economy should be brought to a knowledge of the fact that a dispensation had come to an end. There were 70 weeks of special favor that had been set apart, as Daniel records for us, and those 70 years had ended 3.5 years after Jesus was crucified and resurrected. Brother Russell suggests that not only did Paul write this for the Hebrew Christians, but that he wrote it for the apostles, the other 11 apostles. Some of them were very, very slow to recognize that a dispensation had come to an end. You will recall that even Peter needed a special vision so that he might recognize that the time had come, as Jesus had indicated, when the message of the kingdom might be preached for a witness to all nations. But, dear friends, not only did Paul write this epistle to the Hebrew Christians of the early church, but he wrote it also to the Christian Israelites of the gospel dispensation. So while there is a special message, as it were, for those in the early church who were Hebrews and who had accepted the Messiah, the prophet of Nazareth, there is also much in this epistle that, because of God's overruling, is directed unto us. He reminds them that God had in other days, in the older days, spoken to their fathers through the prophets, but in these latter days had spoken by way of his own Son. This surely might have been an indication to some that a dispensation had come to an end and that a new dispensation had begun. But evidently this wasn't sufficient, because there were those that were known as Judaizers who would put pressure upon these early Hebrew Christians and ask them, how about an intercessor for you? We have a priesthood. We have a temple. We have the tabernacle. We have these rituals. We have the law. What have you? And so Paul, of course, he had to enlighten these early Christians, these Hebrew Christians along these lines, so as to indicate that the time had ended insofar as Israel's special favor was concerned. Now, we do recognize this, that he first brought to their attention that he was now dealing through his son, who being in the brightness of his glory, Jehovah's glory, and the express image of his person, and upholding all things by the word of his power, when he had himself purged our sins, sat down at the right hand of the majesty on high, being made so much better than the angels, as he hath by inheritance obtained a more excellent name than they. And one of the things that he brings to their attention is the fact that God, in dealing with the nation of Israel of old, had promised them his peace. He promised them his rest if they would hear his voice and keep his covenant. Those of you who are interested might find it in Exodus, the 19th chapter, the 5th and 6th verses, where God affords the Israelites of old an opportunity to become his peculiar treasure above all the families of the earth. And of course, as he offered this to them, he also indicated that if they did hear his voice, they would become a priesthood unto him, that they would really become the blessers of all the families of the earth, even as has been promised through Abraham that his seed was to bless all the families of the earth. Israel would have been a priesthood of blessing to all the other nations of the world. But Israel failed in this. They did not enter into God's rest. True, they entered into sort of a rest. Joshua speaks of it as a rest, that God had given them this rest that he had promised. But this was not the rest that God had in mind. The rest that God had in mind was his own rest. A rest that wasn't dependent upon outside circumstances or conditions. It would be a peace that would surpass all human understanding. They might have entered into this. But, as you know, they were in no position to manifest the faith of faithful Abraham. And because of their transgressions against that covenant which God made with Abraham, because of their lack of faith, because of their lack of obedience, they never entered in. And it says, because of transgressions, the law was added. Now he brings to their attention then that this rest which God had promised still remained. This was the rest of God, and he says, seeing that those to whom it was first promised did not enter in. So you'll notice then, dear friends, that even though Joshua felt that they had entered into this rest, God at a later day, through the psalmist, says, today, if you hear my voice, harden not your hearts as in the day of provocation, in the days when you tempted me in the wilderness. God had delivered them from the bondage of Egypt. He brought them under the blood of a Passover lamb, and then delivered them through the sea into the great wilderness, and was leading them on toward their promised Canaan of rest.